Wikipedia is written by hundreds of thousands of volunteers from around the world. The servers and administration are maintained by the Wikimedia Foundation, which is funded by donations from people like you. Give today at donate.wikipedia.org.
Election Day is the first Tuesday in November. You still have time to register if you're a New York resident. The deadline is October 12th. If you're a college student, you can use your campus address. It's easy.
To register to vote online or to make sure you're still registered, just visit www.vote.org. Remember, the deadline is October 12th, and your vote counts.
Vote for me, vote for me. I'm the one you can trust, you'll see. Play your part in democracy. It's election time again.
That's only 10 days away, so be sure to go to vote.org and make sure you're registered. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. Time once again for Off the Wall. Well, it's another Tuesday, and we're back with another edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, you're listening to Off the Topic, the show all about non sequiturs and other unrelated issues.
Did you know this table is red? I just realized that. You know, our last table wasn't red, and I think it's something about the color that just sort of makes you feel more vibrant and alive.
Yeah, it has kind of a cool marbly pattern. It kind of looks like the surface of what I think Mars would look like.
It's raining outside again.
Yeah. Very moist. Oh, yeah. What were we talking about?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
What? It's,
Senator, I object. I object to this form of treatment. I object to being hounded like this.
I like coffee.
I have never in the history of my life felt so under attack. I will shout, I will scream, I will cry. I will kick the table if I have to, but I will get my way.
Analog program. What does the new note on the program mean?
I am entitled. I am entitled to this.
No, you're not.
I am entitled to all of it. It's mine. You can't have it.
No, you're out of
it's
control.
It's mine.
You're having a mantrum.
I'm an angry white man. That should be enough.
No.
No? It used to be enough. It used to be enough. You're saying today it's not enough anymore?
You're hostile.
Damn right I'm hostile.
You're defensive.
You want to fight? We'll go out in the hallway of this Senate building and we'll fight. In fact, I think that actually is what happened. I think he did. I think he went outside and he decked somebody.
What a week.
Man, you know, this Brett Kavanaugh guy, I wouldn't get in a car with him. Seriously, I would not trust him to drive. And we're talking about putting him on the Supreme Court. What are you, out of your mind? Come on.
E, put it in perspective.
Oh, my God. No.
Think about it. When this started, no.
America, please, just sit down. Just sit down and listen to us. Just for an hour. Please, we implore you.
When he was all saccharine sweet,
when was that?
No. The beginning of this hearing process.
After birth, maybe. When
right.
He was just born.
No. And all, how many protests, do you remember how many it was? It was like 70, 80 a day or whatever. And then he's sitting there with all his little basketball girls sitting behind him, talking about how the most out there thing he did was talk to his football coach. You remember that?
Yeah, that's when I started getting suspicious.
Yeah.
Wow. What a week. We were riveted to the hearings.
We watched all of it, didn't we?
Yeah. Thank God for C-SPAN 3. I got to say, 10 hours, and I could not stop watching. It was just, you know, incredible to see first Dr. Ford testify and then Kavanaugh rebut her testimony. How wide a berth between them did they have in the hallway, I wonder? That was something else. And today I was going through some of the testimony the day after, not testimony, but the senators talking amongst themselves. And my God, I am so sick of these old white guys that are just like boring as hell and just determined to get their way no matter what. And you know they will. You know they are just going to, you know, vote this guy in. Doesn't matter what he did. We're going to get our way. We're going to demonize anybody who's against us. And we're going to make it seem like this is the right thing to do, when it is so obviously not the right thing to do. You know? I mean, Kyle, first of all, I just learned this before we came into the studio. I wanted to tell you, but I didn't have time, so I'm going to tell you now. There's a rash of unsolved burglaries in the Seattle area around the time you were there.
What?
Now, do you object to an FBI investigation that would, tell us if you played any part of the... I mean, you know, basically, there's some suspicion because, you know, you're from there and, you know, that's where it happened and that's pretty much it.
I know where you're going and I...
Don't badger the prosecutor.
I just... I kind of have to say, yeah, I would object to an investigation, but I know that's not really...
What are you afraid of? What are you hiding?
I'm hiding my privacy.
Yes, but okay, fine. That's fair enough. But if you were going to, apply to be the, on the Supreme Court, I think you might be giving up a little bit of privacy, right? So that we know that we're not, you know, putting Ted Bundy or somebody in power. You know, I think that's not much of a sacrifice to ask for. And if you're truly innocent of something, you know, rather than throw a temper tantrum on international TV, why not have the people who are good at investigating things clear your name? Doesn't that make sense?
A little bit.
I think it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, if you just look at this guy, you look at the way he reacts, that tells you something. You know, and if I supported the guy, I would be saying the same thing, because, you know, the way you react when you are questioned about something tells a lot about who you are, your involvement, all sorts of things. And to have somebody on the Supreme Court, where you're going to get that a lot, you're going to have all kinds of challenges and you know, hard questions to answer. If you're going to get all, you know, angry and emotional and belligerent whenever you're questioned, you're not the best candidate. And there are a lot of people who are, you know, good. Dr. Ford, I think, would be great on the Supreme Court. Don't you think she'd be good?
Yeah, she probably could do the job. Sure.
I mean, even without any legal training, I would trust her. I would.
Sure.
And the guy at the deli, I trust him, too. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, he's all right. Yeah.
Yeah, there's all kinds of people I would trust because, you know, they don't seem to be about to fly off the handle. And, of course, there's a lot of people I wouldn't trust. oh, boy. Yeah, the stories I could tell. But, you know, that's the point. That's the point of having hearings. That's the point of having investigations. The thing that really gets me is seeing all these, you know, elderly senators, you know, just plodding on and on and on, and then reprimanding people who dare to speak for a minute against them, saying, hey, we're running out of time now. You know, they all say, we support Dr. Ford, and we feel for her, and we know that she went through something. But she's lying. She's not. Whatever she's saying, we're going to completely discount because, you know, we believe Kavanaugh and we believe her too. We can't believe both. It's impossible. You know, how is it that she's able to describe all this detail? You know, basically the layout of the house, people from the past, the fact that she is from the past, that she went to the same school. You know, was she lying in wait literally for decades in case he suddenly became somebody famous and, you know, she had some kind of agenda against him? Obviously, there is something there. And to simply close down all investigations to try and speed up the vote, to basically insinuate that she's making it up or that there's some other phantom person that did this to her that no one else knows about. It's, you know, how do you justify it? I'm trying to understand that.
I think that remark that had actually been used a couple times in the hearing is really an underhanded way for them to impugn her character and imply that she's damaged goods. Yeah, something happened to you. You know, you're messed up. That almost to the it sounds in the one way you interpret it as you know, sympathetic, but it's really kind of a question of, you know, you're unstable. You might be professional and you might have all sorts of insight and talk smart, but you're damaged goods. You're a trauma. You're still a victim. It was really just to remind at every turn and you know just discredit. It's that real kind of knife twist that she's there. She's testifying. They're saying the words are saying. We stand with her or believe her, but it really the implicit thing, and I think the other meaning there is that, but you're not really credible because you're something happened, you know. You, but it clearly wasn't this man, and then you know, turns into something about Kavanaugh being the victim, right? His family and everything he went through.
Exactly. They believe that you know, she went to school in that area. They believe she went to a party that Kavanaugh was at. They believe that she was assaulted. They believe that she is well educated and well spoken. They believe she's courageous, but they do not believe that it's the guy that she said it was. That's the one thing that she's getting wrong. The fact that the Republican senators don't even trust themselves enough to talk to her directly speaks volumes. I mean, they had to get someone else. They had to get a female prosecutor so that they could look good, who obviously was on their side, so, you know, she would question her in various ways. The composure of Dr. Ford, you know, when she was being badgered, I thought she was being badgered about airplane travel. You know, you're afraid of traveling on airplanes, but you travel on an airplane on this day, and this day, and this day. Yeah, you got to travel by airplane sometimes, even if you're afraid, and people get over their fears. You know, look at the composure that she had during that. Compare that to Kavanaugh, his composure. He would have been leaping over the table at her by that point, you know?
Another example of that interaction was the polygraph billing. You know, who paid for your polygraph? Who did this? Who did
that?
Finally, the lawyer's attorneys just grabbed the mic and interrupted and said, look, you know, this is how it happens. The lawyers paid for it, as is sort of standard, as is, you know, the norm. And it really was moments like that when you kind of saw through the cracks. I don't know.
So what? If Amnesty International paid for it, who cares? That's not the point. What did it say? I know it's not admissible in court, but you know what it is admissible in? A lot of people don't know this. Job interviews. Job interviews, people use polygraph. I've never had one. A polygraph. I've had job interviews, but I've never had a polygraph test. I've always wanted to have one, but I've never had one. But they are used, and people make decisions. Now, this is a job interview. There's no question about that. Why not apply it here? What's the reason? And the only real reason that keeps coming back is we don't want to know the answers. You know, we don't want to see what it actually tells us.
Yeah, the fact that she was willing to go through that. And they attempted
to... Not just willing. She went through it, and she passed.
Well, I was...
It's hugely important.
In contrast to his refusal. Mm-hmm. To even meet that standard. And then, of course, that was called into question, too. Why that over an FBI, over an interview, that somehow an investigative interview is more credible, even though that is a different method, but it was what counsel advised her to do at the time, to at least establish that. And then perhaps another interview or however it played out, yeah, those opportunities would arise. But calling into question just what was attempted to begin that, even after she had submitted things to journalists and newspapers and then, of course, her representative,
mm-hmm.
that somehow her counsel, having taken this extra precaution or get her through this polygraph process, somehow makes her other actions, suspect. It's just kind of ridiculous. She just did everything she could, and a lot earlier than this particular hearing. And
but clearly she didn't do enough, you know? This female prosecutor, whose name escapes me at the moment, implied...
Rachel Mitchell.
Okay, Rachel Mitchell. Rachel Mitchell. It's hard to say. Okay, fine. What Ms. Mitchell implied was that Ford... wasn't completely telling the truth when she said that she left the house. And I don't know if she was implying that she got picked up by somebody to get a ride. How did she make the phone call? There weren't cell phones back then. It was hard to make a, it wasn't hard to make phone calls. You could make a call from the house, maybe, or there's pay phones everywhere. There used to be pay phones everywhere. But just casting doubt in so many different ways. Because there really wasn't anything else. I'm asking America now. I'm asking people who believe Kavanaugh is the right person for this job. What more would it take? What more should Christine Blasey Ford have to prove her case? I mean, I don't think a video camera was running at the time, unfortunately. That was not happening. A witness. Okay, well, you know what? The two people in the room were Kavanaugh and this guy Judge, who's not a judge, but that's his last name. And she's accusing both of them of taking part in the crime. And for some reason, neither one of them is corroborating her story. They don't agree. So, you know, how do you get people to agree with your story when they're the ones being accused in the first place? What you do have, corroborating evidence in his own calendar because, get this, I think it was Grassi who was poo-pooing the idea of the calendar being accurate. There's an entry there where, and don't even get me started on this calendar, talk about anal retentive. This guy wrote down everything he did, except for probably the crimes. He was going to a party, and he listed names that were there, and Christine Blasey Ford also talked about a party where four of the six names were there. And her testimony was discounted because she didn't list all six. First of all, you're assuming that Kavanaugh is telling the truth. You're assuming those two showed up in the first place. And for God's sake, why does it matter? Why does she have to keep perfect attendance when she was almost raped? It doesn't make any sense. The fact that she basically went to a party the same month as he claims to have gone to a party in the same neighborhood, and she's alleging something happened, there's enough there. That's corroborating as far as I'm concerned. I'm just wondering, what more do people want to see? Because, you know, you go back to 1982, how do you put people in certain rooms? How do you get that corroborating evidence? How do you do it? It's not possible. And what she has provided so far is very persuasive. And she's kept her cool. She's not an operative. She's not someone politically motivated. She seems very credible. She's got absolutely nothing to gain from this. How do you not take that seriously? You know, and then that's not even taking into account the other people that came forth. That's not even taking into account his temperament. That's not even taking into account the refusal to be part of an FBI investigation. The number of times he was asked, "Would you support an FBI investigation?" How hard is it to say yes? You know? Yeah, I'm innocent. Do whatever. Get the intergalactic police involved. Who cares? Let's get this over with. But instead, he dodged the question, you know, so incredibly. Well, it's not my call. I'll do whatever the committee says. Knowing the committee is controlled by Republicans who aren't going to agree to that, sure, he can say that. That's easy to say. But he never gave a straight answer. He's eluding. And that is right there in front of you. How does that not bother you?
Yes, and evasive. Another, what was it, Willie Gohmert or Senator Elmer Fudd? I don't know who he is, but he's one of those dumb Southerners that said, basically, like, looked him in the eye and did this whole, like, did you blah, 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 and then, waiting for his response, and then that was it. I have no further questions. You know, he did one of these things
you're talking about Kennedy. Yeah,
Kennedy was basically like,
do you swear before God?
Do you swear before? Yeah, this kind of like gentleman's agreement thing where, you know, if I look a man in the eye and I get his word, that, you know, somehow that supersedes the testimony.
Yeah, you really get to know a man when you punch him in the face.
Right.
Yeah,
it's that kind of this, like, old boys thing that he, you know, trots out as like, well, I looked him in the eye and, you know, all this God talk and whatever, and he said no, so it must be true. Well, that doesn't supersede her claim. Uh-huh. Her claim is her claim, it will be investigated, sure, and, you know, basically Kavanaugh disputes her claim, but doesn't deny necessarily that he was possibly in the same context, in the same circumstance, you know, and, you know, this is just more of them sort of the assumption that he cannot be there, that the evidence wouldn't be able to corroborate him there, and I think that's going to be quite contrary to what the FBI finds. If they're going to spend a week doing this, they're going to get a lot of other opinions about what kinds of stuff he was doing back then. That's the only way. But like you said, it's like, you know, there is no photographic evidence. There's no, like, no way you can point to some technical, indisputable aspect of it, you know, other than these physical items. I know that they're calling for Georgetown Prep alumni to submit any information they have, you know, that kind of stuff. So, you know, the woodwork is being called upon, and all the stuff will come out. And we'll see Friday, I guess, what that ends up being.
Well,
but
I
just, these jumping to defense and all these kind of old boy, you really did it this time, you know, it's really like these fatherly moments where he's getting like a slap on the wrist and, you know, all of the questions from the Democrats either get interrupted or otherwise, disputed. Or evaded, like you said,
mm-hmm.
And it was pretty hard to watch, and the tone, as you said, changed so much as soon as this stuff was revealed. When Cory Booker broke protocol, these kinds of things, you know, we started getting a little more information.
Well,
but this is nothing. I mean, this is just one salacious thing that came out in the course of this hastily done hearing. And to hear the Republicans chastise Democrats, well, you know, this is really all you have. It is about character, and this stuff really kind of does matter. I think that Jeff Flake kind of realized that towards the end of the week.
Okay, that I want to touch upon. First of all, I want to touch upon the dumb Southerner remark. Those people are dumb Southerners, but we're not implying that Southerners are dumb. Because we've been to the South, we love the South, and there's plenty of dumb Northerners.
I can say it. The president says it.
Yeah, that's true.
But I can say it now.
I'm sorry. No, but I'm trying to say he doesn't represent all the people. But yeah, there are plenty of dumb people everywhere, or people that just aren't listening, or people that don't care. There's plenty of those. Those aren't the ones that we're hoping to change. Okay, I'll give you an example. I don't know which senator candidate it was, but he's a Democratic senator. He's a Democratic candidate for a Senate seat somewhere, and he won't answer if he supports Kavanaugh or not because he's in a red state and he doesn't want to lose the election. And come on already. That's just stupid. That is stupid. You say what is on your mind. You are not going to get anywhere by pretending to be somebody you're not unless you're actually that person and you're pretending to the rest of us. If you don't believe Kavanaugh is the right candidate for Supreme Court, say so. Don't worry about the constituents because they're not going to elect you anyway because of the other things hopefully you will say if you actually believe them. I don't like cowardice. And if you believe something, stand up and say it. I think we saw a lot of people standing up and saying things. And one of the instances that made me the most proud was the elevator scene. That's where two survivors of abuse confronted Senator Flake in the elevator. And I don't know how they weren't escorted out by security, but thank God they weren't. For minutes, they were basically pleading with him to reconsider, to think about what his actions of supporting Kavanaugh would mean to survivors of sexual abuse, to women in general. It was just such a moving scene to see that. And I think one of the proudest moments of democracy, when people can actually confront their leaders and not be arrested, not be escorted away, having to listen to the people that you supposedly represent. And you know what? He did. He listened. It moved him. He's a human being. Now, he may not make the right decision in my mind, you know, in the week or so ahead, but in that moment, you could see in his face it was reaching him, and he is the one who was able to insist on the FBI investigation that is going on this week. Now, that investigation, I don't know if there's much that's going to come out of it because it's only a week, and it's somewhat controlled. I'm just reading now that Christine Blasey Ford's attorneys are imploring the FBI to interview her. They haven't interviewed her. Why haven't they interviewed her? I mean, she's one of the most credible witnesses there is. Don't you want to, you know, find out more from her? Anyway, they're on a strict deadline, so maybe they can't talk to everybody. But it's something. I don't think it's enough, but it's something.
She's the most immediate witness, so it seems sort of unusual that they wouldn't.
Yeah.
Interview her.
Of course, it's crazy. Here's another senator from Iowa, Joni Ernst. She said she will continue to support Judge Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court should the FBI not find additional evidence or corroboration of accuser Christine Blasey Ford's allegations of sexual assault. She basically said on CBS This Morning today that based off of Ford's testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee, the corroboration wasn't there with the witnesses she brought forward. Again, I ask, what do you want? What you know, from 1982, what do you expect? Well, she said, what we want to see is there evidence or corroboration that the FBI is able to find through the supplemental investigation that would corroborate Dr. Ford's accusations? And if not, I will continue to support Judge Kavanaugh based on the information that I have at this time. Wow, that was a real train wreck of a sentence that said nothing. Asked what a vote of support for Kavanaugh sends to women, particularly from a female senator, Ernst said her positive vote shows women that we are innocent until proven guilty, and sometimes well beyond that. I have absolutely no doubt, after reviewing Dr. Ford's testimony, that she has suffered from something very traumatic in her lifetime, but simply the corroboration wasn't there with even the witnesses that she brought forward. The witnesses that she named have either denied those claims or cannot corroborate, which I do believe hurt her even more so. But again, I do believe she has suffered from something very traumatic. I do have doubt that it was Brett Kavanaugh. Okay, so you believe her, but you don't believe her. You know, you're trying to get the best of both worlds here. Witnesses, you know, generally when you're the victim of a sexual assault, the idea is not to have witnesses, not to have a whole lot of people, you know, pointing and saying, oh, look at that. You know, there were parties at people's houses in the early 1980s, teenagers. I'm sure not all of them were crazy enough to keep calendars as to where they were on particular days. But I think you can get them to agree that they were at parties in that particular time. Good luck finding anybody from that far back to corroborate anything in your life. This is not realistic to expect this kind of detail. And, you know, it's kind of like you talk about the Twilight Zone. This is a Twilight Zone because you see people confronted with facts and just not seeing them, refusing to see them. There's more attention being given by these people to how the letter was leaked than to what actually happened to her. Who cares how the letter was leaked? It's bad if it was leaked by somebody in a governmental position, but it could have been leaked by anybody she talked to. You know, it's not the first time she's mentioned this. She's mentioned it to a therapist, to a husband years ago. So it's quite possible that word filtered out that she was talking to somebody, that she was upset by this. This information could have been leaked in any number of ways. You know what? You have the rest of time to investigate that. That is not urgent right now. What is urgent is the vote that is about to take place. And if you put somebody in the Supreme Court who is mentally unstable, and judging from his outburst, I would say that he is pretty much hanging by a thread, somebody who may be a criminal abuser, somebody who may have an alcohol problem, all kinds of things that have come out as a result of this. You do that, and then you have as little respect in general for the Supreme Court as we do now for the presidency. I mean, look at what's happened to the presidency, the office that used to be respected, even when people like George W. Bush were in power. You know, the office still had some meaning. And after what it's going through now, I don't see that happening, not for a while. There's going to be a long period of recovery. The same thing with the Supreme Court. That, you know, that institution where people are appointed for a lifetime, where they have the ultimate say in how laws are interpreted, that is going to really leave scars. That is going to be scary.
Yeah, and really affect people's lives, unbelievably. And for a really serious period of time. I mean, it's just the way that institution, the way that part of our government moves and the sorts of decisions and issues it's confronted with, it's monumentally important to get right. And the sheer haste with this is just, I mean, it's despicable. It's pretty disappointing.
Why the haste? What's the hurry? I don't get that. You know, we obviously have things to talk about, things to investigate. Why are we pushing this through without investigating them thoroughly? You know, either call the woman a liar or say, yes, I believe her and I want to hear more. I want to get to the bottom of this. You can't have it both ways. And, you know, to hear Kavanaugh say things like left-wing conspiracy and revenge of the Clintons and all this nonsense, he is no different than the most far-right senator in that room. And, you know, Supreme Court justices have never spoken like that. They've never been that type of person. They've always been kind of, you know, they don't even applaud during the State of the Union. You know, they're supposed to just sit there and kind of absorb it and interpret, not be advocates for one side or another. That is not the case with him.
Yeah, they're supposed to be passive observers and maintain that sort of independence, that distance, the proximity from the actual partisan or institutional side of politics that leads to sort of conflict and taking sides.
And you know, I think even without the allegations against him, his performance on Thursday, that to me is disqualifying. I'm not saying don't get upset when you're accused of something. I've been accused of things. We've all been accused of things we haven't done. Okay, but to fly off the handle like that, especially in the middle of a Senate hearing, you know what's coming. You know what they're going to be saying to you. You know what they're going to be asking. It shouldn't be a surprise. You got to keep your composure. You have to show that you're mature, that you're above this, especially if you're innocent, because the facts will bear that out. The facts are on your side, if you're innocent. And to see somebody who is so quickly unhinged, that worries me. In fact, it worries me to the extent where I would say for every Supreme Court nominee in the future, we just concoct the crime that they're accused of and confront them with it and see if they can hold it together. If they can hold it together, okay, you know what? You pass the test. But if you pull a Kavanaugh, nah, sorry. That's not what we want. We want people who can keep a level head, because you're going to be called upon to make some hard decisions.
Yeah.
Shall we take phone calls?
Yes.
631-632-WUSB is our telephone number. If you have something to say on this or other matters as well, 631-632-9872. We'd like to hear your point of view. It's certainly something the whole country is talking about. It has been fascinating, a fascinating civics lesson, and something I think we'll be talking about for many, many years to come. We have a phone call. Hey, good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. I've been listening a little bit, and are you interested in different perspectives?
Of course, all the time.
Okay. Well, you're talking a lot about someone who has had a pretty long record of being on the bench and doing quite a lot of putting out a lot of opinions that don't necessarily stand in agreement with the people that have pushed and pushed to try and stop his nomination. And I don't know if, talking about someone in the way that you're talking about them is really productive when they've led a very, very successful career on the bench. You're forgetting that. You're saying he's not a level-headed person because he was extremely upset about what has actually been done to him. I don't see that as reasonable. And my other point is, we talk about, well, he's political because he brought up left-wing conspiracy or the Clintons. There are real truths to some of these things. People feel this way. And, you have other judges on the Supreme Court that are certainly politically minded one way or the other. I mean, Sotomayor, for instance, was at an event for a higher education NASPA conference speaking about all types of issues that the left is fighting for, adamant for, and she's a current Supreme Court justice.
Did she speak out against the right-wing conspiracy?
She spoke out about all of the agenda items that the left is currently fighting for, and she's a current Supreme Court justice, so you can't tell me that somebody isn't fit for the court because he may feel that there are people in a particular party that are trying to push him out. We know it's about power.
Well, I would say she was.
I love your station. I have to tell you.
Thank
you. I live locally.
But
I'm a Stony Brook alum. I even work for a college. But I have common sense.
Uh-huh.
I think that you have to think about the other part of the audience that you might be speaking to and possibly offending. I have sons. I have a daughter. I can't even imagine worrying or being concerned that somebody could make an accusation that is uncorroborated with no evidence whatsoever and could change my son's life forever. So please consider these things when, you're talking on the radio. You can't be so one-sided.
Yeah,
please.
But
that's all I have to say.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Thank
we'll respond off air. I wanted to engage in a dialogue there, but okay, fine. First of all, to say that you can just make accusations without evidence, it's not that easy. It's not that, because you can't just randomly choose somebody and say, I'm going to accuse this person of a crime and there's nothing they can do about it. There are people who do that, sure, and they're quickly found out. And then there are people who make credible allegations and they either have a lot of evidence to back them up, or they don't have a lot of evidence to back them up because of many reasons, conspiracies or length of time, all sorts of things like that. At some point, you have to ask yourself, okay, this guy might be qualified, this guy might be a good judge, but is it possible he has some skeletons in his closet? And that's really the only question that's being asked here. You know, let's investigate. Let's find out. I didn't see anybody coming to a conclusion and saying, yep, you know, you're guilty, that's it. But I do see people acting emotionally when they're told, that's all you can say. You can't do any more. We're not going to discuss this anymore. Well, then they're forced to say no. They're forced to say, I'm not going to vote for this guy because you're not investigating enough. Yeah, it's easy to say there's no evidence, but we haven't looked for the evidence, have we? We haven't had the investigation. The investigation is going on now. It's a very limited one. Maybe it'll find something. You know, I think you measure people by the way they react to stressful situations. And we all lose our cool at some point. But usually in private moments, not when you expect to be accused of things, when you know what you're going to be accused of, when you know that you have more than 50% of the room on your side, then I have to say it's a show. And to have somebody accusing basically half the country of being part of a conspiracy, naming people such as the Clintons as being somehow a part of this, it doesn't seem like that's Supreme Court material. There's plenty of people that are, and after seeing what I saw, I don't see it here.
Yeah, I think standing by the accusation is a lot of what I consider evidence because, you know, as you said, people who can't stand by their claim or they're quickly found out to be having fabricated something, it's not the same. It's not the same kind of claim and consistent claim. It's a good other thing to keep in mind that I was hearing this week is that a lot of the previous vetting, you know, he had been a justice, he had been on courts, he had been you know, active and, you know, been, you know, the best coach ever and all that, but this is a totally different job, and if not now, when would we ever have an opportunity to find out more about Mr. Kavanaugh? And, you know, frankly, as Cory Booker said, and I said a week ago, there's a lot about his record that we don't really know.
That's true.
I want to know about his involvement in the USA Freedom Act.
So much was not released. So much was held back. I think 90% of his writing.
So
it's not classified information. It was kept from the committee because they just wanted to speed this thing through. And that's just not right. That's sneaky behavior, and, you know, we should take time on this. Republicans had no problem when, you know, it came to Obama's nominee, having that stay on hold until they decided they were going to nominate somebody else.
My point is that it's, you know, he gets a pass because anything terror gets a pass. So we're not even asking those questions at all, let alone looking at his actual record during that time. And this is just from what I'm hearing from senators who are a part of this committee. They are saying, look, we don't have everything. They're not getting the majority of the information. And the stuff that they have, you know, they can't release. And they did because they felt a lot of this was in the public interest. And this particular claim was something that was brought independently. And as Dr. Ford said, it was something she considered her civic duty. And the fact this guy is so comfortable, and he's been so comfortable his whole life, comfortable, not asked, you know, difficult questions, not put to the test, always trusted, always considered to be the most virtuous person, I think is why he reacted the way he did. Mm-hmm. I think that reaction was
entitlement. Yeah, he feels like nobody should ever question him.
Well, but also, you know, he could not be frank about that period of time because he has a way of looking at it and a way of talking about it, and it's a little bit, I think, polished versus reality. That's kind of what I'm getting. Why else would he be hostile? You know, if he was confident and calm I wouldn't be a suspect.
Exactly.
Because someone who's confident and says, okay, well, yeah, okay, well, we're going to do that, fine. You want to hear about
the
parties?
Send in the FBI. Look, I'm innocent. Get
you
want to
hear about all the drugs
I've
done?
You know what? Accuse me of anything right now, except for the stuff I actually did. And you will hear me say, yeah, go ahead. You know, turn over every rock possible. Go get the FBI. I'll sit here. I'll wait.
But he's over it.
Give me a lie detector test. I welcome it. You know?
But he's over it and given up and a different way,
mm-hmm.
With the proceeding and really showed his disgust with the entire process
and the entire system.
Yeah, and I just go back to okay, you know, so he was gliding through a confirmation process for the highest court in the land.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody keeps saying that, but it's kind of true. And you know, we don't want to look at anything else but an individual who has made a claim to representatives, to her local representatives, fine. You know, if we don't get to look at any other part of his record, and we don't get to, you know, pause at any point and learn anything more about him than what has been carefully curated, but save for one person that comes forward and speaks honestly and stands by it, you know, that's what we have in front of us.
And she's not the only one.
She's the only one
we heard from, but there are others.
Right.
So, you know, that, his reaction, the fact that people don't want investigations, they don't want lie detector tests, and they want to speed this thing through, it's not about a person. It's not about him. It's about policy. It's about getting the policies you want while you have the chance to stick somebody in a court for life where they will have the power to change all kinds of things for decades to come. That is what this is about. Let's at least admit that much, because it's really suspect to simply brush aside all of this, all of what we've been talking about, and say, yeah, you know what, we're just going to push ahead anyway because that's the way it has to be. Just ask yourself, this, if it was on the other side, if the only difference was that this was a Democratic president and it was a judge seen as liberal, would you be reaching the same conclusions? I highly doubt it. You know, I've caught myself in these situations where I realize, okay, you know, maybe I'm being a bit hypocritical here. If you can honestly look in the mirror and say, yeah, I would be defending the guy if it was, you know, President Obama or somebody nominating him and he had these skeletons or alleged skeletons in the closet. Just don't see that happening.
I'd want to know more.
Why wouldn't you want to know more?
It would be tough, but I would want to know more about it. And just the last thing, I think, just if you know, about, you know, her son's, the caller's son and whatever. I totally get that it's a difficult time to be faced with some of this. But the reality is we have a pervasiveness of mm-hmm. I think disparity in the way women are treated, and we have a lot of difficulty in how we're learning and treating one another and how that kind of emerges, gendering and relationships in general, I think is messy. But suffice to say, you know, if your son didn't do it and was accused of something, he would say, I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And be calm about that. Maybe upset that, you know.
He could be upset. I can see being
that
upset.
Someone was confronting it. But the point is, like, you know, yeah, have a conversation with your son or daughter about these things and all of that. And it's important. But, you know, the crux of it is teach your kids about relationships. Teach your kids about the term now, consent, and how that works. You know, what are those conversations like? And your son won't be in that position.
Yeah,
you know,
and I wouldn't put the idea in his head that he's going to be accused by people of things he didn't do, because then he'll just be suspicious of everybody around him, and that's not a healthy way to be.
He'll turn into an incel.
Oh boy. Don't even start with that. Hey, we have other things to discuss here. First congressional race, which is taking place here on the eastern part of Long Island. Noticed something rather interesting last week. We were talking about how the incumbent, Republican Trump wannabe Lee Zeldin, was never, ever talked about in Twitter by Donald Trump. Now, he's always extolling the virtues of President Trump. And it was just kind of sad and a bit pathetic because Trump never repaid the favor. And we mentioned that last week. We said, yeah, you know, Zeldin mentions Trump constantly, and Trump never mentions Zeldin. Well, guess what? The next day, Trump tweeted about Zeldin. Isn't that remarkable? You think one of them listens to us, or is this an amazing coincidence?
Zeldin operatives listen, and they tweet in Little Bird's ears or something.
Well, maybe. And if Zeldin operatives are listening, there's something they should note. How to spell your candidate's name. In Port Jefferson, we've talked about this before, there's the corner of Route 112 and 25A or Broadway, where Broadway meets Main Street, whatever that corner is, the one with the flashing light that confuses everybody.
It's under the stupid ice cream cone, the big stupid ice cream
ice cream store. Yeah, because it's owned by this guy that is super right wing, and he's put up Trump banners before and been fined by the village because it violates the law. Well, now there's a big Zeldin sign up there. Register to vote and vote for Zeldin, except they spelled Zeldin's name wrong. They spelled it Z-E-L-D-E-N. Oh, boy. Well, that was yesterday. They fixed it today. But can you imagine? You know, you have to, first of all, write it down, okay, and not realize that you're writing down the name wrong. Then it has to go to the printer. Okay, I'm not expecting the printer to know who the candidates are. Fine, let that one go. But then it comes back from the printer, and somebody sees it and says, yeah, you know what, that's right, that's fine, no problem there. Then you put it up, massive banner in front of a store. It's still spelled wrong, and nobody catches it.
You missed a step. Somebody proofs it. So the printer sends
that's
you the proof.
That's right, the printer
then
sends you the
proof.
Then
you give it the okay, which ostensibly that is the juncture traditionally where you would maybe stop the project and make a correction, but no, it gets sent back. Then they send you the finished product. Then you hang it up, and then somebody somewhere notices, and then you finally, out of shame, replace it. Two trips to the sign printer.
Yeah, because they went back to the sign printer, apparently, and got another banner for today because now it's spelled right. Even though it's violating the law, having it up there, it's still there. That's what we're dealing with here.
Waste,
first
fraud,
district.
And abuse.
Yeah, again, deadline to register October 12th, so we've got that. Hey, we went to an interesting hearing in Nassau County last week. The marijuana listening sessions, basically talking about the legalization of pot in New York and what that would be like, things to worry about, things to voice an opinion on. It was at Hofstra University. There's another one happening in Suffolk County in Ronkonkoma. And that will be on October 16th, that's in 2 weeks, 2 weeks from tonight, at the Clarion Conference Center, 3845 Veterans Memorial Highway, starting at 6 p.m., so we won't be able to go there. But we went to the other one. I was very impressed, very proud of Long Islanders, because so many smart people, so many educated people that really knew what they were talking about, that seemed open to all kinds of ideas and ways of doing things. There are a few exceptions, I think, and differences of opinion, as to be expected. But I was pleasantly surprised. What do you think, Kyle?
Oh, we don't have enough time to talk about this. I would say I have very many things to say. Where do I start? Part of it, I think, was a little retrograde, and what I mean by that is, you never know who really was going to stand up. It could be somebody who's way ahead, you know, like they represent an industry, or somebody who's really, you know, way out of touch, has no idea about what these things are about, or they come in hot, you know, like mad, you know, particularly people saying, what about kids? Or what about my son or daughter or family member in recovery? I don't want to dismiss this stuff, but the entire listening session was called Adult Recreational Marijuana. I mean, it was they were tying in and conflating all these other things, and we would lose focus. The fact that, like, okay, yes, you know, edibles and colorfully packaged candy infused with THC, yeah, that's a danger. Kids find that stuff attractive. We're going through it now with vape.
Right.
Stuff and you know, the fake K2 weeds and all that stuff.
No, I think we all agree it shouldn't be Bazooka Joe pot gum. You know, that probably isn't a good idea.
So there were many, many people that spoke and had to correct that. So as much, you know, kind of misled stuff was thrown in, either out of
blind rage against marijuana, anything, or just purely not having experience or just questioning, like, I have a son or daughter, or I work in addiction and recovery, which is a huge issue right now. There were many people there talking about the opioid epidemic, questioning the validity of cannabis and treating that, which is an entire conversation in and of itself. And I'm, you know, someone, and many people who were kind of older smokers, people who are very familiar, all age ranges really, mm-hmm. but people familiar, really familiar with cannabis, who were kind of having to open up and talk about their experience. And my point with that is it's not for everybody, and that is a truth. And I guess the really short conclusion I came to is that there were a lot of interesting perspectives there. Even the beverage industry trying to get in.
Oh, my God, the beverage industry.
They were
industry.
All about it. But if I was going to stand up and speak, I would have, A, said keep the licenses very inexpensive. Compliance to have a recreational outlet is expensive. You don't want to make small businesses basically go bankrupt. Liquor licenses in this state for like industrial are like $50,000, $29,000. It's insane. If you want local economies to thrive, you got to make the licenses cheap. That way, small businesses – and have a fair lottery. But the beverage industry, yeah, there's going to be infused drinks. Let them have that. They have a contribution. And the same thing with parents and people who are viscerally against it. They need to be calmed. They need to be heard and spoken to, too. Yes, they're insane, I think. But, you know, I would invite people who are familiar with some of the legal states, bring some of these people, some of the women that were there, people that were concerned, parents, teachers, and educators. They should go and visit and see some of the states and how it has been implemented. So those kinds of things came to mind. I have a lot more to say.
I have a lot to say, but I won't be able to say any of it. But, the beverage industry, they want the corner on the market, and it's really not fair. Let others do that. I don't know who these women from Rockville Center were, but there were about 10 of them, and they all were against pot. They just came in a crowd. And, of course, you know, the issue of children having access to pot is on everyone's mind, and that's something that, you know, people address that by saying if it's regulated, it'll be a lot easier to regulate than if it's not regulated. But there's so much else we can say on the subject. Also, finally, we have tomorrow, 2:18 p.m., we have the wireless emergency alert test. Your telephone will make a crazy noise at 2:18 p.m. And we're having a party in Brooklyn at the Commons Cafe, 388 Atlantic Avenue. Be there at 1:30, and we're going to have a bunch of people with phones all at the same time. And it'll be something that has never happened before, and maybe it will never happen again. Or if it does happen again, it'll be the end of the world. Hey, we're out of time. Stay tuned for Finn's Revolution coming up next. We will see you next week. Write to us at... OTW@2600.com. Good night.